serving up the champagne. Pop. It's my house. Come on.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Make yourself at my home, tell me where you've been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to
And welcome. Welcome to the start of the NFL season, Matt Wilhelm. What a glorious day. Glorious. The NFL is back. Jack. Tonight, Super Bowl rematch, the Panthers and the Denver Broncos. For the Browns, we are now 3 days away from the kickoff of the 2016 NFL season. Mike Florio and others starting to get on the bandwagon, picking the Browns over, of course, the Philadelphia Eagles.
And I think, and a lot of the reason behind it is, I think... an outside perspective, it makes sense. They expect, and I don't think Carson Wentz is any better than Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, you know, or any other starting rookie quarterback, Peyton Manning, Troy Aikman. You've talked about their struggles in the past. Carson Wentz is going to come in, and he's not going to light it up. He's going to be good or worse than good, okay? Good, average, bad. So he's going to be good at best, average or worse, right? Which plays into the favor of the Cleveland Browns. And then you look at our quarterback and the strides that he has taken this preseason, and as you said, collectively, and you know it off the top of your head, what, 318 yards?
For RG3?
For RG3.
22 of 38, 7.9%, 313 yards,
three touchdowns,
a 100 quarterback rating.
And only one interception that, yes, I think is as much
early
on Gary Barnage as it is on RG3. So a high-quality preseason for us, and there's got to be some optimism centered around that. And when I look at that Philadelphia Eagle defense, and I believe me, I know Fletcher Cox is a beast. I know Fletcher Cox, you know, has got a $100 million contract, but if you look how – big free agents who get big contracts, they too don't just J.J. Watt doesn't come out of the gates and go for three sacks in week one. They, like everybody else, have to. Everyone's a little rusty in the regular season. There's going to be missed tackles. There's going to be some MEs. You're going to be out of position here or there. But by the end of the first quarter, mid second quarter, you're really understanding, getting a grasp on the game again, and you're like, your muscle recall and your mind recalls to go, oh yeah, this is what the regular season feels like. And then you start to play. And I think for the Cleveland Browns, we have to take advantage of that and do everything we can to get out of the gates early, to have the Philadelphia fans sitting on their hands, potentially booing Carson Wentz, and allow us to get some points on the board, and this young team to get some confidence in themselves. And you can truly then believe in their message that Hugh Jackson has been harping, which is expect to win. You've expected to win coming here. You got up early. Now finish what you started.
And it's a game where I think it will be a low-scoring game. I think if the Browns win, they've got to keep the Eagles under 20. Now, the Browns could end up getting north of 20 in this game if they get some short fields, maybe a special teams play, a turnover from Wentz, a defensive touchdown, which I think is possible in this game. So it's going to be a little bit of a defensive struggle. This defense of the Eagles is very good at all three levels. The vulnerability comes at the cornerback position, and that's where Corey Coleman is going to have to show up and show up in a big way, along with Terrell Pryor and Andrew Hawkins. Those three guys, their ability to win that matchup, I think, is going to be important. We're going to go through the pressure points on both sides of the ball, the Browns offense against the Eagles defense, Eagles offense against the Browns defense. We'll talk special teams as well. As we go throughout the show today, we're also going to hear from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns in just a moment in his response to what Brian Billick said about the Browns not being able to find a win on their schedule. We're going to have Christian Kirksey live in studio today talking about week one, the matchup with the Eagles. So a lot of stuff here, plus in hour number two, I'll be answering fantasy football questions for you guys. That's back, part of the FanDuel Fantasy Minute. So be sure to hit me up on Twitter, hit us up on Twitter, or call at that time, and you can use the Twitter hashtag AskTFC. My old The Fantasy Consultant moniker, ladies and gentlemen, coming back today. But let's start off with what Brian Billick said. It ruffled our feathers yesterday on the show. We were upset about it. Well, it really ruffled the feathers of Hugh Jackson, and here's what the Browns head coach had to say.
Who said what?
Brian Billick.
tweeted today.
Wow. He looks at the good schedule, for him. Doesn't even see I didn't know he worked here. So I'm just being honest. Nothing to Brian, I mean, but I think it's really interesting that everybody can comment, you know, on other people's teams and don't even understand their inner workings. So I have great respect for Brian. He was a great coach in this league. But we'll see if that's true. You know, we'll see if what he said is true. We'll look back in 16 games and see if it's right. But I'm not going to get caught up in that. You know, obviously, I think you guys know my competitiveness. I don't want anybody to say we can't win anything. I just don't think that's right. I don't think it's fair. But at the same time, I know how hard these guys work. I know what the expectation is. And we got to go prove it. You know, me talking about it is not going to change it. Only thing that's going to change is what we do on the field.
And he's right. And respect is not given. Respect is earned. And the Browns need to do that by changing the narrative. The one thing that I am struggling with, and I'm struggling with this, and maybe I'm you know wrong to be struggling with it, but I am struggling with this, is people keep talking about the deconstruction of the Browns and how it's a total tear-down job, etc. What have they deconstructed? An overpaid team that went 3-13 to pick second in the NFL draft? I mean, it's not like it's what are they tearing down? And I get that people are like, well, how could they win now because they've torn? I mean, there's really very little room to go down, and I would say that I think they have. They're better coached than they were a year ago from top to bottom, just the whole staff, the experience. And that's not a knock on people that were here before. That's just anybody. Most people get better over time at their jobs. And there's over 120 more years of NFL coaching experience on this staff. I think you've got some young guys that are hungry. And I think it's time to see what you have. Again, to me, it's a season of progress and development. But I think that they should be able to match at least what they did last year and hopefully do a little bit better than that.
I agree. And I think, you know, when you look back on even some of the statistical leaders of the 2014 Cleveland Browns and the 2015 Cleveland Browns, I believe, even without playing a football game, that we've gotten significantly younger. And also, I believe we're going to be as productive while still being younger than the statistical leaders of 2014 and 15. And just starting with leading tackler. Leading tackler, I think the last 2 years was Carlos Dansby, correct?
Yep.
14 and 15. DeMario Davis is going to be a 130 tackle guy for the Cleveland Browns. Maybe 115 if Christian Kirksey can also match his 115. The two of them, if I were in that room or I were in that position to be Christian Kirksey, I would have a conversation and go, I'm going to lead the team in tackles this year. And you're going to look back at me and go, no, you're not. I am. And it becomes a battle to get to the football by those two inside linebackers that are the tackling machines of a 3-4 defense. And I think the same can be said from a pass rush standpoint. You know, Paul Kruger is in fact gone. So there's going to be drop-off. But look at the season that he had last year.
Only 2.5 sacks.
The drop-off already came. Now, used properly or not, that's not for me to say. Okay? He was doing what he was coached to do. Now, these guys are going to be coached to get after the quarterback, and we've seen signs of them being able to do that in Nassib, in Orchard, in Agba, in Joe Schobert, just in the preseason alone. And then you get into like the wide receiver. Our wide receiver leader in yards in 2014 was Andrew Hawkins, correct?
Yeah.
He's still here.
Yards.
He's still here. Two years better, hopefully, right? His role has changed. Our leader, and I mean, look at Taylor Gabriel. Taylor Gabriel was a rookie who was, I think, third in receptions or in receiving yards in 2014. And you know, but was third in the league in yards per reception at 17.4. Significant drop-off from 14 to 15, and he's gone. And you look at Terrell Pryor and what he's going to be able to do. You look at Josh Gordon, what he's going to be able to do. And you have, you know, three other rookie wide receivers. Now, I think Robert Griffin III, to me, is an upgrade from Brian Hoyer, from
even McCown,
McCown,
yeah, in terms of
from
upside,
Johnny
sure.
Manziel, all those, and also younger than all of them as well. So we've gotten younger. And I believe that, at least without playing a football game, that the production is going to be about the same.
Yeah.
So that's where the optimistic, rebuilt Cleveland Browns. We've gotten younger, and we're going to be as good as they were when we essentially were constructed and we were supposed to make a run towards the playoffs.
And look, it's a starting baby steps, but I certainly think that the fact that people don't give the Browns a chance in this one is a little bit overstated because of the youth of Carson Wentz, what he has seen, and more importantly, what he hasn't seen. I believe that, you know, when you look at this team, you could make the case that today the offensive line will be worse than it was a year ago. Cam Irving, Alex Mack, Mitchell Schwartz, Austin Pastore. I think anybody would say right now that that's probably last year's version was a little bit better. I think the scheme that they'll be operating in this year will be better, which has an opportunity to make them more effective than they were a year ago. And we'll find out. This is going to be a great test for this offense and this offensive line right out of the gate, because this offensive line is facing a very good front led by Fletcher Cox, as you talked about. Our Ohio Business Machine's hot topics of the day. What do you kind of think of the narrative going around about the Cleveland Browns right now? Where are you at with this team? The deconstruction, as it were. Really, it's more of a construction. I think that it was a flawed building that needed to be abandoned, and that's what they've done, and they're trying to build a new one. I think it's more of a construction. It is time to go through the scouting reports. That'll be our Ohio Business Machine hot topics for the day. We will go through that and get you the Browns offense versus the Philadelphia defense, where the advantages lie. We'll go through that when we come back. We'll take your phone calls. Christian Kirksey, as I said, in studio. We will have Hugh Jackson from the podium at 2 o'clock today. He is speaking with the media. And then we've got the fantasy football stardom Sidham as well. So a lot to get to, but football is back, man. And I've been excited all day since I woke up. I can't wait for the game. I can't wait for that means fantasy football is back. That means the NFL is back. That means just it's a ton of fun. And I couldn't wait for this game. I've been waiting. It seemed like the preseason was like 8 years in a month.
It was. Now, I'm excited for all levels of football to be going on now. That starts tonight. High school's been going for 2 weeks. College has gone for a week or so. And I know there's a couple early games. And now the NFL game starts. And for me, it's like, yes, we are busy, but now at least it's going to be uniform. You know there's going to be a game on Friday by the Westlake Demons up to a certain point. There's going to be a Buckeyes game on every Saturday, home or away, and now the Browns home or away every Sunday. I'm done with, you know, a TV special here, a radio here. It's like all over the place. All these preseason games on Thursdays and Fridays. It's just football on Sundays is back, and I'm excited for that.
I can't wait. Football on Thursdays and Sundays and Mondays. All the days that we get to have this glorious game. That is going to be a lot of fun. All right, when we come back, we're going to start off Browns offense versus the Eagles defense. That's what we're going to lead off with. We'll also take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Where are you at with this team? What are your expectations going into week one? What makes this a successful season for you? Do you believe that Carson Wentz is just going to roll his helmet out there and stomp on our Cleveland Browns like people are saying? I don't think so. What do you think? Let us know when we come back here on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here. Dog Pound. Be sure to tune into News Channel 5 every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. to get the latest behind-the-scenes news and information about your Cleveland Browns. Tune in to watch Browns Countdown at 11 o'clock with me, Nathan Zagura, Andy Baskin, Matt Wilhelm, and the top dog, Hanford Dixon. That's 11 o'clock every Sunday morning on News Channel 5. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 216-578-0850. We've got Phil in Brecksville on the line. Hey. Phil.
Hey, guys. Man, I hope you're enjoying coaching. You've got an ability to explain things that aren't easily explained easily, so I'm sure you're going to be a great coach.
Thank you very much. I am enjoying it thoroughly, and the hard work by myself, the other coaches, and the players is paying off as we are 2-0.
You know, the first time that one of those players out there does something that you and him just talked about, he looks at you, and you're the only two that know it. It's all going to be worth it, so that's really kind of cool.
It is. It's very fulfilling. Thank you.
So, thinking about this reconstruction, guys, and you kind of think about it, it's obvious to me that they've reconstructed both the offense and defense from top to bottom, which means they left both the offensive line and the defensive line primarily alone. I mean, if you look at where our defense is, you know, you look at Pryor and Campbell are young, Taylor and Hayden are young. We've got two outside linebackers, two middles, and they left the defensive line. On the offensive side, they left, you know, they went for wide receivers. We're okay at tight end and running back also. My question is why? I mean, they haven't said it, but it seems obvious to me that their plan has been to construct it this way. Do you guys have any thoughts about that?
On why the Browns, just explain a little more, why the Browns have what, decided to do what they have with the roster?
Why they left both the offensive and defensive line alone this first year and went after, you know.
Why they left the offensive and defensive line alone?
I don't think they really did. I mean, they drafted Drango. They drafted Coleman in the third round. They signed Alvin Bailey. Those are three new guys in that offensive line room that have made it. They drafted Nassib to play on the offensive line. Defensive line. They brought in Steven Paya to play on the defensive line. And they drafted Agba, who can play some on the D-line and outside linebacker. Remember, they didn't expect to lose Dez Bryant, which was well after the draft, who was counted on to be the best player on that defensive line. But I think they have addressed the lines. They haven't done it to the level that you saw in years past, where it was numerous first and second round picks. But then again, a lot of those guys aren't here anymore, unfortunately.
Right. No, I mean, they did their very best. There's only a few positions that you can say they didn't address.
Yeah.
They drafted a corner, right? They drafted a safety. They drafted an inside linebacker.
They drafted pass rushers. And receivers.
I mean, the running back room is essentially the only position that they did not draft, correct?
That is the only one that they didn't address, and that's the one that they...
I mean, punter, kicker, snapper.
Ultimately felt the best about.
Right.
I mean, on offense, they drafted a quarterback. They drafted two offensive linemen. They drafted four wide receivers.
They drafted a tight end.
So the only position untouched is running back. D-line, they drafted Nassib. At linebacker.
Slash Agba.
Linebacker, they drafted Scooby Wright and brought in Alexander. So that's two on the inside.
Schobert.
On the outside, Agba and Schobert. At corner, they drafted Trey Caldwell and traded for Jamar Taylor. So that's two. At safety, they drafted Derek Kindred.
Right.
So they addressed literally every position on the team other than running back.
And you can do that.
Still our holes.
And you can do that when you have 14 picks and you have the equity that we have. And we'll have at minimum, what, 11 next year?
Yeah, at a minimum, plus
compensatory picks for Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz.
Mitchell Schwartz, Benjamin. I think we're in line for four between the third and seventh round. Most likely it'll be between the fourth and sixth. So, yes, tons and tons and tons and tons of picks. And they've got to get it right. Ultimately, at the end of the day, this plan only works if they are able to get in the draft and get multiple guys that have an opportunity to contribute and be those foundation pieces and those building blocks. Speaking of this game, let's look at the Browns offense against the Eagles defense from a year ago. You look at this team and what the Eagles were able to do just 1 year ago. They were not a great defense. They were kind of miscast in that 3-4. They gave up about 135 yards per game on the ground, so they struggled in their run defense. But that's not the same team that they are this year. They're now going to that wide nine, the 4-3, which suits their personnel very well under Jim Schwartz. We talked through some of the guys on that defense yesterday, but when you look at the Eagles last year, they were outgained by about 600 yards on the season, outrushed by about 400 yards on the season, and they really struggled getting off the field. 43% third down conversions allowed. That was something that I know that they're stressing and they want to improve. And again, as I said, they struggled against the run, but I think it's very difficult to compare when you switch schemes what you saw last year and what you get this year. I think this year you have a real opportunity to get a massive improvement on that defense because of the right utilization of their personnel. I think bringing in McLeod to be the safety alongside the Pro Bowler already, Jenkins, was a big move also.
It's definitely a big move. And I think as Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton put together an offensive game plan, they're going to watch, you know, some of the core of what they do in the preseason in that wide nine situation. And then they're going to look at the success, not only in this preseason, but in past years, as you follow Jim Schwartz around where he's had that wide nine system, and see what works best against that wide nine system. And don't be surprised that at those little nuances of attacking a certain gap or a strategy to capture the edge, as I said, in that wide nine, you know, maybe a down block or a crack block by a guy like Terrell Pryor, you know, who can hold his own physically against a guy like Brandon Graham or Connor Barwin. There's weaknesses in every defense. Okay, some of them are player-based, some of them are scheme-based. And that's where the studying and understanding of who this defense is, both as a scheme in wide nine, where you study past history of what works against it, and then you study the players that you've seen, and if this is their first stop in Philadelphia in this wide nine, you study them in an Eagles uniform, or you study some of their tendencies in a different uniform. What do they do best with? What do they struggle with? You know, you attack their weakness. That's the core of putting a game plan together. You just don't go, oh, they've got, you know, if I'm saying, like, if we play Darrell Revis, we're going to throw at Revis. No, the odds are good that you're not going to complete a lot of passes. You go to the other guy. You find the weaknesses. You find the weak link, and you abuse that weak link. And then herein lies the chess game. They're going to try to fix and protect that weak link. Or when you attack a certain gap, they're going to do something to come back at you to protect that gap. Then you've got to have. That's when you get into play B, play C, and play D in our playbook.
That's what you need to do. When you look at this matchup, I think the advantage for this team does come up front. The Browns are going to have to find a way to keep the pass rush down from this team that was very, very effective at getting to the quarterback. You look at their front four, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox, Benny Logan, Connor Barwin. Just 1 year ago, in terms of their ability to get to the quarterback, we talked about Fletcher Cox, what a monster he was. 9.5 sacks, 16.5 tackles for loss. Graham, 12.5 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks. And then you go down to Connor Barwin, who added, I believe, another 7 sacks that he chipped in a year ago. So this is a front that really can get to the quarterback between those guys. Over 20 sacks just from those three on their front four. We know the Browns didn't even have 30 sacks a year ago. So this is a group, that's where the matchup really is going to lie for the Cleveland Browns on offense. Can this line protect, and can they open up running lanes against that front? Their linebackers of Jordan Hicks, Michael Kendricks, Nigel Bradham, veteran group, good group. Kendricks probably the best player there. But the secondary, they have great, I like the safeties, Rodney McLeod, Malcolm Jenkins, but the corners, McKelvin, Nolan Carroll, Ron Brooks, Jalen Mills, that's where you can target this team. That's where the Browns will have to target that team. But to target corners, you need time to throw the football.
Yeah, you do. And I think it's going to be a combination of, you know, 3- and 5-step drop and our ability to get those guys, their inability to get a pass rush, because they're only a step or two into their pass rush. We're able to get rid of the football quick. That's going to be something RG3's had to, you know, needed to work on. So we'll have to see that. And then I think as you start to, you know, dink and dunk your way, those guys start to get comfortable with what you're doing against them. They're going to get a little over aggressive, and that's where the shots down the field come into play. Prior, catching a hitch, boom, hitch and go. Those types of scenarios. That's something that we know Hugh Jackson is going to do. And I think ultimately, as the season wears on, this is, I guess, my baseline analytics. I think Hugh Jackson's going to take 3 to 5 shots down the football field in each and every football game.
You've got to loosen them up. I think we're going to see some screens as well to Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell to try to slow down the rush of this front here from the Philadelphia Eagles. When you think about this team, and when you have a guy like Fletcher Cox at the defensive tackle, how do you deal with that? Does that require a double team? Is that going to be a guard and Cam Irving on him all game long?
Yeah, I think it does. I really do. And or if he is single blocked, you're running away from him when he's single blocked. And the other thing that I, you know, have not having watched a whole lot of Philly this preseason, you know, going into this football game, it all depends how they're going to call their front. Because they can set Fletcher Cox, their 3 technique, to our strong side, which is the side that, will, of course, would have our tight end. You know, then you become a weak side football team. A lot of weak side runs. I don't mind that. That means Joe Thomas kicking out on a wide 9 technique, forcing him up the football field. You get Joel Batonio in a man block or a down block on their 1 technique or shade, which is going to be on the guard. You can get, you know, Cam Irving pulling around that down block up on a linebacker, and boom. You know, now you're cooking with gas. You get Crowell running downhill. So there are ways you can attack this football team. And I think 2 bodies on Fletcher Cox, that will wear him out. I think sometimes playing a little high-low, I don't mean a high-low block, but you're taking him high. And then on a 3-step drop, you know, Greco or Batonio cut his knees out. Those are the things that you can do to slow up a guy, to have him play a little bit more tentative, not just a bull in a china shop, which it seems because of how statistically stat-filling he is, you know, with over 100 tackles and 16.5 tackles for a loss and all those sacks and all those pressures. You gotta play with him. So cut him 1 time, you know, then go high, then go low, then go low, then go high. That's the game that we have to play. We can't take for granted that we're just going to block him the way we normally do.
And John Greco's had a solid preseason. Joel Batonio's back to being 100% healthy, which is good for the Browns, but this is going to be a big test of the interior of that line, and I think a massive test in many ways for Cam Irving. This is going to be the first time that he's going to have to deal with someone like that right in front of him, working in tandem with a guard, and we'll see what he is able to do, because I think that is ultimately going to be the key in this game. Can he do it? Can he get it done? And if he can, then we've got an opportunity to have some success against this defense. Because if they have time, I do believe they have an opportunity to go ahead and attack this defense on the perimeter.
Yeah.
That's where you've got to get it.
I agree. I do. It's our ability to capture the edge, though. Because that wide nine on paper deters you from getting to the edge. Because of, especially with these guys, Brandon Graham and Connor Barwin.
We're really, though, 3-4 linebackers
they are
playing defensive end in this,
correct,
in this set.
But so, the athleticism, you know, when you really get into things, you know, that athleticism on Austin Pastore, that athleticism, you know, on Joe Thomas in the run game is different, because I think Austin Pastore and Joe Thomas can handle them in the pass game with as good as Joe is, and what we saw to Austin Pastore being a little bit of a mauler with a mean streak. It's just, can they handle the athleticism on the edge in those wide nines?
That's going to be the question. And speed more than power has,
correct,
been the issue for,
or
Austin
speed
Pastore.
To power. You know, he gets off the ball and you transition, then he's all up in your chin, you know, running you back into the quarterback.
I think, again, Gary Barnes is the guy we haven't talked about much, but I think he's going to be a big factor in this game as kind of that outlet passer. And he's working against, you know, Bradham, Hicks, and Kendricks. Now, Kendricks, I think, is a good cover linebacker. It will be interesting to see what kind of a matchup they can get for this team against, for the linebackers, for Gary Barnage. Because I think in a game, especially when Josh Gordon is not available to you, Corey Coleman's new, and the reality of it is, so is Terrell Pryor as a wide receiver. He's new to the game. Can they get some favorable matchups in coverage for Gary Barnage? And I think that's going to be very, very important. Kendricks last year, he's considered a good cover corner. He struggled, had a bad Pro Football Focus grade, allowed a lot of completions. Can they take advantage of that? Hicks was hurt, but he's a very good cover linebacker. And can they take advantage of that? Is there any way they can get those favorable matchups, or Duke on a linebacker, or Crow on a linebacker?
And that all comes from study. It really does. And I think something that Hugh Jackson does very well is to create a game plan, which we've talked about. And then in the game, and this goes for both sides, I think Ray Horton and Hugh Jackson, as they call this football game, is their ability to anticipate what coverages they're going to be in and have the right route called, and or what protection we need to have versus some of their blitzes, or if they're going to stand there and just rush four in that wide nine situation, knowing we're going to have seven droppers to find the voids in the zone. That's something that, you know, Corey Coleman's going to take a little time to get used to. Terrell Pryor's going to take a little time to get used to. And that's where the veteran in the room, Andrew Hawkins, really comes into play to be able to stand up in front of the room and go, when they do this, we're going to do this. You know, and that's where I also believe Al Saunders will really start to pay dividends, not only in the development. We know what he can do from a development standpoint, but he has seen all the routes and he's seen all the different coverages and he knows the beaters to all those situations. And I think his input on this passing game plan is going to be huge to help our receivers be successful.
Yes, it will be. But again, it comes from protection up front. They've got to keep Cox and company out of the backfield. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Christian Kirksey is expected to join us in studio as soon as he comes off the practice field. That will happen, hopefully, in the next few minutes for you. 216-578-0850. What are you concerned about? Browns offense versus Eagles defense. Where do you think the advantages lie for Browns offense against the Eagles defense? We'll continue to go through our position breakdowns and our scouting report here in this game when we return on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here with you. Dog Pound through the Cleveland Browns Foundation 50-50 raffle. Lucky fans in attendance can enter to win big at Browns home games this year and make a difference in the lives of Cleveland's youth. Raffle tickets can be purchased at First Energy Stadium through your smartphone, on the Browns mobile app, or at kiosk locations. Don't miss this chance to support your Cleveland Browns Foundation and shoes and clothes for kids. Go Browns! Zagura and Wilhelm here back in the studio. Chris Kirksey should be with us soon. 216-578-0850 is the way to call up if you want to get on board. Let's take a look now, Matt, as we continue to go through this. We talked about our offense against their defense, their offense against our defense. I think clearly the number one matchup is going to be their ability to turn around, hand the ball off to Ryan Matthews, and go from there.
Yeah, it really is. And that's where I'm excited to speak to Christian Kirksey and, you know, just ask him about their preparation, where they're at mentally as a defense, and I think where he's most comfortable. And because I think where they're most comfortable, as we've heard from Hugh Jackson pretty much all training camp and since he's got this job, is he's going to find out the strength of the players and then put them in a situation to succeed. And they'll custom build the game plan based off the players, not simply because they have an agenda of a scheme or something they want to accomplish. It's get our playmakers in the position to make those plays. And then it's like you count on those guys to make the plays when the task at hand.
One thing that I don't understand is you would think when you throw eight guys in the box, okay, you're basically playing what in the real blocking scheme of things, you're basically playing 8-on-5, maybe six, 8-on-6.
8-on-6.
Okay, you have two free guys.
Sometimes seven.
Sometimes
if there's a fullback.
Okay. But that would be if there are what, two tight ends?
Oh, the five offensive linemen, a tight end, and a fullback.
Or two tight ends would be seven.
Correct.
Okay. So you're at minimum, the worst you're doing is plus one.
Right.
Okay. In reality, some of the defense, you're 11-on-9 because there's the ball carrier and the quarterback.
Correct.
When Adrian Peterson used to say he liked running against an eight-man front better than a non-eight-man front because he felt that, yes, he would run his head into the wall three or four times, but all he had to do was one time get through and he was gone.
Right.
So he felt he could hit many more home runs against an eight-man front. Once he got in that second level, he was gone.
Correct.
If a team is bringing, you know, and listen, Adrian Peterson led the league in rushing with Christian Ponder. I'm sure every team in the world said, let's just make Christian Ponder beat us. Why is it not just that easy?
Well, the reason why, and it's something that goes back to, you know, the last couple of years having sat here and talked about our inability to stop the run, it was, if this were on camera, I could jump on a whiteboard or, you know, jump on the film with a laser pointer and show you in an eight-man box that is, you know, with eight men dedicated to stopping the run, how one guy, sometimes two, don't do their job. They get reached. They're on the ground. They're in the wrong gap. That's two. There's two guys, or they get sealed and they're not in their gap. That becomes the culprit of why an Adrian Peterson run goes, instead of just being 3 yards in a cloud of dust, to 12 yards, 20 yards, 60 yards if he outruns an angle, you know, by a safety. And why he says that, because when you're playing a guy like Adrian Peterson, even in a seven-man box or six-man box, you always have to be very wary of that player if there's run and you react quickly. But when it's an eight-man box, eight men are dedicated to stopping the run. And what happens is when the offense blocks everybody up, whether you have six blockers, seven blockers, you'll always have a free hat. And the defense's job is to funnel the runner to the free hat. To the free player. As you've noted, there's always one. You know, unless you're essentially in 22 personnel, which is two tight ends and two backs. Then it's 8-on-8, right?
Yep.
And you're even adding a corner to the situation because there's only one wide receiver. So that being said, is when you block it up perfectly and Adrian Peterson, you essentially run away from that free hat. If you're able to create that situation, Adrian Peterson, just like Emmett Smith, you know, they find that crease and they burst through that crease with a head of steam. And then it's like the parting of the Red Sea. All they get is open grass. You miss one tackle by a safety or a corner who's filling.
Over.
And boom, you're out the gates.
So some of it has to do with your pursuit angles, right? You've got to have your right pursuit angles. You've got to have discipline, gap discipline. But in a situation like this, you would think you should be able to find a way to contain Ryan Matthews. He is not Adrian Peterson.
No.
He's been very effective, but you would think you can find a way to do this.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, and I would even furthermore, as you study the Philadelphia Eagles, I wouldn't be surprised if Ray Horton and the Cleveland Browns are studying some of what Kansas City did, because if you look at who they have, it's Alex Smith, you know, a game manager, productive with his legs and accurate with his arm. That's about what Carson Wentz is, but you're discounting it because he's a rookie. So he's even more indecisive with his legs and probably less accurate because he's a rookie than Alex Smith. But they're the same type of player. And then you look at what Jamaal Charles is. You know, the slasher type of runner. You're going to get him in space. And that is what a combination of Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles is. So how the Kansas City Chiefs used Alex Smith and, you know, and they've got, you know, they're, what's the quarterback? Chris Kelce? Is it
Travis Kelce. The tight end.
Travis Kelce. So Kelce, Alex Smith, and Jamaal Charles in a Doug Peterson offense is probably going to look a lot like Carson Wentz, Jordan Matthews, Darren Sproles, Zach Ertz, Brent Celek. So if we're studying anybody to get a true understanding of how Doug Peterson calls a game and creates a game plan, looking at the Kansas City Chiefs is probably our best opportunity.
Yes, it is. All right, we're told Chris Kirksey will be closer to 2 o'clock. We'll have the head coach of Hugh Jackson as well for you in the second hour, plus some fantasy questions. 216-578-0850 is the way to call us. Again, 216-578-0850 is the way to call us up here today. We've got a lot of questions right now about this team. When you look at, you know, this defense and these linebackers, DeMario Davis, he is that run guy. But when you're going against, this is a big game for Danny Shelton as well, going against Jason Kelce, one of the best centers in the NFL. On the ends, for our youngsters rushing out there, you're going to be rushing against two very good tackles for this team in Lane Johnson at right tackle and Jason Peters at left tackle. The guards, whilst competent, are the weakness of this line. They have that kind of the shell that we thought we had a year ago when you have Joe Thomas, Alex Mack, Mitchell Schwartz. You've got to still be able to get in there through the interior. This is a big game for Danny Shelton. This is a big game for John Hughes. This is a big game for Paya. Those guys up front have got to be disruptive in those A and B games.
They do. And a part of the 3-4 defense and something that you and I have talked about pretty much all offseason, especially with as athletic as we got at linebacker with DeMario Davis and Christian Kirksey, is that middle dog cross. You know, that middle dog, those two linebackers becoming a focal point in our ability to rush the passer. If, you know, we're subdued by Jason Peters and Lane Johnson outside, you know, and we're mixing and matches, we're always going to bring those guys because the outside linebackers are a staple of the 3-4 as much as the inside are. But they've got a good center and two guys at guards. If we can confuse them, and to be very honest, when we get in that 3-4 defense and we're doing that kind of stuff, preferably, I wouldn't want Danny Shelton in the football game because Danny Shelton has got to get where he needs to get and occupy needs who he needs to occupy to allow a middle dog cross with something running right up his back to be executed properly. Someone to get blocked by the guard. He's got to get away from the center. You get on the edge of the center. You've got to confuse the back by mugging in and mugging out and to get a free runner at the quarterback. And I like a John Hughes. I even more so than that, I like Xavier Cooper with that fast first step to get out of that way and occupy a guy, pull that back shoulder, and allow that cross to come in right behind it.
And hopefully they are able to do that. Speaking of P. Myers talking from our offense, he thinks we need to go 11 personnel early and often. The weakness is the secondary. Take one of their good linebackers off the field. Have it be a nickelback who for them, Ron Brooks, originally a fourth-round pick of the Bills in 2012, who's only had 7 passes defensed in his career. So he is relatively inexperienced at the corner position, been more of a special teams guy. And then they've got behind him Jalen Mills, who was this year's draft in the 7th round out of LSU. I think you want to try to get them. I think that's a good point. You want to get them into that nickel, a 6-man front as much as possible.
Yep.
And then you can try to run out of that.
That's the key.
Or try to get either a mismatch of Barnage on the nickel where he can body him up, or Andrew Hawkins working against the safety or the nickel where he can use his speed to separate.
Sure, even furthermore, you know, we saw the success of Robert Griffin III in the zone read. You know, that's going to be something, that's going to be a wrinkle that we build into our offense, you know, each and every football game as Hugh Jackson puts together the game plan and how the team, you expect them to play the zone read or how they've played it in the past becomes how big or small our package with the zone read is in the football game. Now, if you get that end crashing down and the quarterback can pull all day, I'll take RG3 in space on a scraping linebacker.
Absolutely.
You know, but if you got Barwin and Brandon Graham, you know, out on the edge, you know, and it's a give, then it's like that allows us to get 2 on Fletcher Cox and then and stay on that. And then you get Crow or Duke Johnson in space, essentially, with what the zone read creates, you know, on the linebacker. You know, running downhill 3-4 yards.
Well, I think that's where you need to attack this team is at the cornerback position, and you want to do that. I think you need to spread them out. I think that's a great point by P. Myers Golf. And when I look at it, this is not a team that I want to line up like the Browns of old would do with Jim Dre out there, or in this case, it would be Randall Telfer, and go a lot of two tight end and say, we're declaring we're running it down. We want to go against your base defense. I think you want to get those linebackers off the field, and you want to try to go after them through the air. But it comes down to your ability to protect the quarterback, and for RG3 to be quick and decisive in his reads and get the ball out. If he can do that, I think they'll be able to go ahead and get down the field and score the football on the Eagles and make it hopefully difficult for the Eagles to do the same when they have the ball. The key will be no short fields for Carson Wentz, no turnovers for us, and trying to steal a short field, a sack fumble, a pick where you throw a trap coverage at him, make him think he's seeing one thing. It's actually something else. Drop somebody back like a zone blitzer and pick it off in the hot lane. Hopefully the Browns can do that. When we come back, we'll take more of your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Let's go now to Stanley in the Slavic Village. Stanley, welcome.
Hey, fellas, thanks for taking my call. You know, it's time to put the defense on Front Street. We all know we got to stop the run, make Carson Wentz beat you. When that doesn't happen, who's accountable, players or coaches?
Who's accountable if they don't deliver? I think everybody would be accountable if they don't deliver. I mean, some part of it is they are young, and the coaches, they've got to get them up to speed. I think it's on everybody. It's about execution. At the end of the day, it's an execution league. I think this game is on the defense. I think they need to come out and take over like they did last year against Tennessee and like they did against San Francisco. No coincidence, those two games where the Browns turned in a dominating defensive performance were the two best victories of the whole season.
Correct.
That's what they're going to have to do, because I don't think they're going to be able to win a shootout like they did against Baltimore a year ago. This is going to be a game where the Browns are going to have to play good defense to win, and I think it'll be on everybody if they aren't able to do that. Pat in Chesterland, welcome.
Hi, guys. My question is, what happened to Nate Orchard? I mean, he seemed to be one of the few bright spots from last year's draft, and I was really disappointed to see that he had lost his starting job. It just seems like more holes are being created faster than they can fill them.
Well, I mean, Nate Orchard is still just a second-year player, had a very good final quarter of the season. This defense slightly different than the defense he was drafted to be in. I think it's clear these guys want to see, quote-unquote, their guys play earlier. I think that it's an interesting one. I thought Nate Orchard did well, but do you remember Nate Orchard flashing in the preseason, getting to the quarterback? No, he didn't. And I think they like what they've seen from Schobert. Nate Orchard is still going to play. I don't think he's just not going to be on the field.
And I can't see Joe Schobert playing 65 snaps in the National Football League as a rookie. I just can't. I don't think it doesn't play to his strength.
Sure.
And it doesn't play to the strength of the defense as well. So you're going to need Orchard to play a lot of snaps this year as well.
Yeah, I think he will. I mean, I like the way he came on at the end of last year. I was actually very optimistic about Nate Orchard this year. Again, I'm not in those meeting rooms. I'm not, one of the coaches to make that decision. The move surprised me to Joe Schobert, but they like what they've gotten from him. He was highly productive in college when people said he wouldn't be. He's looked good. I wonder about his size on the edge stopping the run a little bit, whereas Nate Orchard was probably our best run defender on the edge
last year. Kept contained, yeah.
So it could be a situation where they mix and match certain settings, where they believe it's more of going to be a run. You'll see Orchard with Agba. When they think it's going to be more of a pass, maybe you'll see more Schobert with Agba. So I'm not reading into it too much. I think Nate Orchard will still play, and I think as this season goes on, part of what this season is finding out who the guys are, and if Nate Orchard is out there making plays, Nate Orchard is going to stay on the field. I think that's one thing that's clear with the way Hugh Jackson runs this team.
And I believe that both of these guys are going to get opportunities as they mix and match. You can essentially say Schobert, Orchard are 50-50 starters in this defense, and I think as time goes on through the first quarter of the football season, whoever's playing their best football will slowly become the starter at that position.
Exactly. And that's what I meant by it. I think over time, the cream is going to rise to the top here. And anybody who is making plays on a consistent basis is not going to be sitting on the bench for Hugh Jackson. I think that is very easy to say And I personally feel it is very apparent. I think if you're out there and you are making plays, you are going to be on the field. Now, Joe Schobert, again, who knows what these grades mean in terms of what our coaches think, but obviously they felt that Schobert stood out. But if you look at our preseason grades, Pro Football Focus, Joe Schobert was the number two defensive player on our team. Again, his stats, one sack, one hit, two hurries, so that's four pressures. He had one pass breakup, 10 tackles, and 8 run stops. Nate Orchard, in less snaps, he had 70. Schobert played 116. No sacks for Orchard. 3 hits, 1 hurry, so same 4 pressures, no pass breakups, 6 tackles, only 2 run stops. So I think Orchard, when you look at Schobert, led the team in run stops there, was near the top in pressures with 4, only Ogba had 5, so he had more, and also Carl Nassib was up there north of 5. But those were the guys that were doing it. Nassib had 7, by the way, quarterback pressures. They like what they saw to Schobert. I don't think it's as much of a knock on Orchard as maybe other people do. I think that he's going to get plenty of time to play, and they're going to go with the guy that gives them the best chance to win and develop. That's what this year is finding out, who it is, and who those guys are.
And the key point in that is Nate Orchard was just a rookie last year, so his development is still ongoing.
Yes.
Just because he's in year two. That goes the same for Xavier Cooper. That goes the same for Danny Shelton. That goes the same for Cam Irving. They just happen to be in different circumstances now starting for the Cleveland Browns.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Paul Myers asking, and wants us to ask this to Christian Kirksey, but I'll ask you. One of Doug Peterson's favorite route combinations is the post-wheel route combo. How do you defend that as a linebacker when they're using, for example, I bet Darren Sproles will be in that at least a couple of times in this game, trying to get that matchup with Sproles on a linebacker?
Well, I mean, it's easy to say it's his favorite route combination, but there's also 7 to 10 different coverages you can be playing in. If you're right. In man-to-man, it's easy. Keep your eyes on your work. You know, the corner's going to sink in with that post, and the running back and or outside linebacker who could have blitz contained could be containing and then have to corral a Darren Sproles type of player and run with him up the sideline. Now, that's a matchup in the favor of the Philadelphia Eagles. But if we're caught in zone coverage, a wheel route's nothing, you know, unless we're, you know, customizing, customizing a coverage, you know, on a wheel route. So, but if it's his favorite route, you don't believe that Ray Horton's going to drill every single coverage that we could potentially be in against that wheel route. And that's the one thing that for coaches, you prepare the players for the wheel route in meetings, you show it to them on video, but you don't tell them when it's coming in practice. And to be very honest, and I've even found this, you know, coaching at the high school level, there were a couple plays yesterday in practice that hit us, you know, that it was, and it was just a slight confusion, or you customize a new defense for this team that you're playing this week, and you execute it, and it doesn't go exactly the way, you know, you want it to look. But then that player literally turns around and you look at him, you go, that's you. You got to do this instead of doing what you did, which is that. So it's making those mistakes in practice against that coverage, or letting that wheel route, you get hit by that real wheel route in practice. I'll be very honest. Every player on the defense, when Darren Sproles lines up in a certain position, and if he's running a wheel route, he'll probably be in gun, offset weak, not a yard away from the quarterback, about 3 yards away from the quarterback, almost outside the tackle to run that wheel. That is the alarm that goes off in your head. If Sproles is in the game, he's set weak, wide from the quarterback, they're not running zone read back across the formation, alert the wheel route. That puts everybody on alert, and then you go, what coverage are we in? Are we in three? Are we in two? Are we in six? Are we in seven? Are we in one? You know, and you go through and you go, that's my guy in this coverage.
Would you expect that against a young guy like Carson Wentz, who has not seen much of the NFL, that when the Browns do blitz, that they will be playing zone behind that blitz more often than they'll be playing man?
Yes.
Because that's the way to confuse?
Correct, and I think it's, you can wholeheartedly say, I like Jordan Matthews versus Joe Hayden and throw one-on-one and expect Jordan Matthews to win 6 out of 10 times. Whereas in zone, you can shrink and move the windows and force Carson Wentz to find those windows, which in the NFL, they're smaller than they are in Division I football, and they're smaller, even smaller than, what did he play, NAIA, Division III? I don't even know. What is North Dakota State? I forget.
I don't know what it's called.
Okay, whatever.
Double
A. A low-tier college football. Carson Wentz threw to open receivers because,
very open,
North Dakota State was winning, you know, competing for national championships at whatever level of college, you know, year after year. So they had better players. They recruited better.
NCAA Division I football subdivision.
There
is
you
what
go.
It's called
subdivision.
They
okay, perfect.
What it's called.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever you want. It's not Division I.
It is. Okay. Not.
So he played against a lower tier of talent there, and he threw to open receivers most times as you and I dove in to study him, his first or second read.
Yep.
Okay. Had that been against Alabama's and Ohio State's and Georgia's and LSU's, those windows would be smaller, okay, because the players are better. And now imagine jumping to the National Football League and those windows are shrinking even more. And now you got, you know, coaches like Ray Horton, who've been a player and a coach for almost 40 years, customizing these windows to jump certain routes and take certain things away, forcing Carson Wentz to it automatically. You take his 1 and 2 away, he's got to go 3 and 4 immediately in under 3 seconds, or else he's going to get his head knocked off.
Yeah.
That's the challenge that we have in front of us, and those are definitely like remedial things that you can do. And that's why I think our plan is not going to be overly advanced, because Carson Wentz isn't going to be overly advanced.
It's going to be simple. What they're going to do on offense, you'd think, is going to be very simple. That's it for our first hour. When we come back, Christian Kirksey in studio, Hugh Jackson from the podium, some fantasy football questions. We'll talk special teams as well on CBD.